Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
James Harden for three. Oh, he's got it. James Harden with a big three-pointer. Brooklyn, for the first time tonight, is on top.
Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Wednesday morning, folks. It's hump day and I'm here to help you get over the hump. We're going to cover all the NBA action from Tuesday night on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mo DeKeel. With me is Jared Weiss. Yep, we're the same team that comes on Monday morning, but we flipped it around. I'm driving this time, Jared. I got control of the car. I got the keys and we're going forward. But don't worry, Andrew Schleck's going to make sure I don't screw too much up. Don't miss exclusive coverage of this unprecedented sports season. Subscribe now and save. Go to theathletic.com/dailything. You can receive an all-access subscription for just $3.99 a month. I spent more on my coffee this morning than that. Coming up on today's show, the Raptors feast on venison, Jovan Buha stops to talk about Lakers and AD, but first, the Nets set the Suns. I don't know if that phrase worked, but I decided to go with it. Nets 128, Suns 124 in Phoenix. Suns came into this game, Jared, with a six-game win streak. They were rolling. They were looking tight. They had wins over the Bucks, over Philly, feeling pretty good about themselves. No KD tonight, still out with a hamstring injury. Kyrie Irving out with a back spasm today. It was kind of a leg scratch. And Jared, like, the Suns were rolling. They were up big. I think they were up as much as by 20 in the first half. Looked like this thing was going to be a blowout. But the Nets came back, and it started with their defense. They were extremely tough in the second half. I think they allowed only 49 points for the Suns in the second half. Started switching, and were really just doing a great job down the stretch. And look, this thing was still, looked like the Suns were still going to walk away with this. Suns were up 8 with 2:38 left. Chris Paul had just hit a big 3, and then the Nets rip off a 12-0 run. Green hits a 3 off a Harden pass. Then Harden hits a 2. The Nets get a call flipped off of a coach's challenge. Green then blows by DeAndre Ayton for a layup. We're going to get more on Ayton's defense in a minute. Bridges then misses a 3 on the other end. Harden hits a step back 3 to put the Nets up by 2. Booker has a chance to tie it. Misses a shot in the post against Shamit. Nets hit their free throws. And they go home a victor, man. Jared, what'd you see in this one?
I mean, just the last couple minutes there, getting the Rockets East going with James Harden and Jeff Green taking over. You know, you mentioned Ayton's defense. How about James just putting him on skates, trying to defend him in the pick and roll to get to the lane with, get to the rim with about a minute and a half left. And then Jeff Green running the pick and roll and attacking the lane on the next play. And then Harden doing it on the next play. I mean, it was unbelievable just watching these guys over and over taking turns, getting to the rim, playing off each other. And I mean, that was the thing that really excited me about when Harden came to Brooklyn, was the fit that he could have with James, with Jeff Green. And too many J's, I can't keep them straight. But Jeff Green is just such a good fit with this team when he's really playing well and he's shooting well. This was just such a good game for him and a great finish. For them to be able to finish small like this up against a team with DeAndre Ayton, I thought was really impressive. But it's incredible to do this against a pretty much full-strength Phoenix team with both Durant and Kyrie cheering on the sidelines. It just shows this is why you make those trades, right? It's because you got a guy like Harden, he can carry you on those nights when the rest of the big three's out.
And I'm glad you brought up those guys on the sidelines, because it wasn't like they were just passive spectators tonight. Like, it felt like they were fully involved in this game. Both Kyrie and KD were involved, cheering up and down, jumping up and down. You saw their reaction when Harden hits the three. You know, Kyrie and KD are on the opposite baseline watching it, and KD shoves Kyrie into the basketball stanchion. You know, got to be careful there. Let's not hurt anybody in this situation. But
let's get you back on the floor at some point, please.
But you know what it was? This really felt like a big team win, despite those guys not being there. And look, I'm hard on the Nets, and I'm going to be all year.
And I'm going to nitpick on things like that, because this is a team that's going to be a championship caliber team, and that's the point where we're at, where we got to kind of look at every little piece for them. But this was a good, like, team building win, it felt like, for me.
Oh, absolutely. This is a game where, right, they're missing their, you could argue, two of their three best players, right? And they shot 57% from the field. Like, everybody in the rotation had a really good game. They went with essentially an 8.5-man rotation. You had Green, TLC, and Shamet as the main bench guys. Everybody shot really well. I thought they played good defense all around. And then Joe Harris, he has to step up and have a big night. He goes 8-for-13 from the field. Even Tyler Johnson, I mean, I can't believe Tyler Johnson had 17 points in 2021. I almost said 2020. It's not even 2020. It's 2021. And he was a good two-way player in this game against a really difficult assignment. So it was really great to see that the rest of this Nets team can step up. Obviously, let's see it happen when everybody's out there on the floor together. If that happens, this could be the best team in the NBA. But we did see, I think, that it's pretty clear that they definitely can run a spread offense around a great isolation or pick and roll player. So I guess the question is, now that we see that this can work really well when they're able to just run everything around one of their stars, how do they continue to keep those principles going while having all the other stars out there on the floor?
All right,
and playing defense.
Let's flip it to the other side. Let's go to the Phoenix Suns. Because this has got to be a really disappointing loss for them. You know, you're up 24 in the first half. You're feeling really confident. You're rolling. You know, this thing hurts. You know, you blow this game, and it's like, what the hell? Like, this should have been a win. No KD, no Kyrie. Like, we're at full strength. We should have came away with the win. What did you see on their end? Like, what was the things that really stood out to you?
I mean, I don't know if this was necessarily the fundamental issue of the game, but Ayton got targeted in switches at the end for Harden to go isolation over and over, and he was so bad defending Harden. I mean, he was just way too upright in his stance. Harden would just attack the body, and he, like, spun by him so easily. I think it was three, maybe four straight possessions at the end of the game, pretty much every single one. I think it was four straight possessions where Ayton just got killed every time by Harden, and then of course there was that Jeff Green one with a minute left to put them down by one. I couldn't believe that Ayton was looking that bad in those defensive situations, because I really expect him to really thrive in those situations, I guess, when he hits his peak eventually. But obviously this Phoenix team is going to be hamstrung if their center isn't able to defend out in space. That's like what they really need, especially because they're a relatively small defensive team besides that.
You know, the funny thing was, it was earlier than that for me when I was like, oh, Phoenix might be in trouble. What was happening was the Nets were switching the pick and roll, and it would end up having DeAndre Jordan on Devin Booker. And I'm like, oh, Booker should be able to cook in this time. And instead, he's trying to post up Dario Saric on, you know, TLC, on Timothy Luau-Cabaret. And I'm so proud of myself for saying it correctly on the first try. You know, but at that point, I'm just looking at going like, yo, you got DeAndre Jordan on you, Booker. You got to go. You got to go attack that. That's the mismatch. Not Saric versus TLC. You have the fundamental advantage, supposedly. And Booker wasn't very good tonight. 9 of 20 from the field, scored 22 points, 0 for 4 from 3. I mean, that was a big thing for me. And then, like you said, just Ayton's defense down the stretch was really, really a struggle for the Suns.
And you know what? It wasn't only that. In the fourth quarter, their transition defense was terrible too. They kept getting cross matches and they weren't communicating properly, and they kept leaving 3-point shooters wide open. We saw Shamet hit a three that kind of helped them come back. Johnson hit one. A lot of the guys that, like, you should be, like, very acutely aware of where they are coming down the floor, and the positioning was completely off. And even Ayton, I think the Ayton turnstile thing was starting really earlier in the fourth quarter. It probably was a huge part of the downfall. And I should say, at least credit to Ayton, he did have a couple baskets kind of right when Brooklyn came all the way back there to help kind of stem the tide. And obviously CP3 had some really great games, plays in crunch time as well. So this wasn't a bad offensive game for Phoenix. It was just that, like, their defense was just so bad, both in the half court and in transition.
Yeah, I mean, look, they held the Nets to 22 points in the first quarter, but after that they gave up 32, 34, and 40 points. You're not going to win a game when you do that.
That's not very good.
Yeah, it's just that simple. James Harden finished with 38 points, 11 assists, 14 of 22 from the field. Joe Harris, like you mentioned, 22 points, 8 of 13 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3. You know, I want to give a little shout out to Landry Shamet. He was struggling shooting for so long, but it looks like it's beginning to come together now. 13 points off the bench, 3 of 6 shooting from 3. Chris Paul led the Suns with 29 points, 12 of 20 from the field. Like I said, Booker with 20 points, 9 of 20. DeAndre Ayton with 16 points, 9 rebounds, which is not really enough for the Suns. Then our next game, the Raptors 124, the Bucks 113 in Milwaukee. The Bucks are now on a 4-game losing streak. All since Drew Holiday's been out during the COVID protocols, they haven't had him for a few games, and they've dropped pretty much every game since. The Raptors were able to snap their small 2-game losing streak. This one was interesting from the start, Jared, just because the Raptors started small. They put Baines on the bench, and I thought, oh, okay, then they're going to start Boucher. No. They started OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Norman Powell, Kyle Lowry, and Fred VanVleet. I mean, that was pretty interesting in that sense. It was a pretty tight game. It was 112-109 with 5:36 left, and then the Raptors just go on a 12-4 run to just kind of rip this game open. What'd you spot in this one?
I want to just make sure I get my random take out of the way here. This might be a little hot, but OG Anunoby had a few plays in this game with the ball in his hands where he looked eerily similar to Kawhi Leonard. Just from the mechanics to the style to the athleticism to the build, everything about him looked very Kawhi-ish. And I thought he had a really nice game. I really loved what he was doing. Chris Middleton was a ghost in this one. I'll give him a lot of credit for that one. But obviously the story of this game is the fact that Milwaukee got pretty much like the textbook Giannis game. And Toronto was able to overwhelm and beat that. And a huge part of it is that, I mean, VanVleet really carried them through this game, which was important because Kyle Lowry got hurt early in the third quarter. And then Siakam, who was a little messy in this game, he was just making plays all over the place here in crunch time and was really the guy that I think gets most of the credit for them really running away with it at the end.
Yeah, so let's kind of just stick with the Raptors here for a second. They've struggled so much to start the season. They've been really like every time it looks like they're going to turn the corner, they drop a couple of games. What's your take on them? Can you know they're right now in like I think the ninth or eighth seed. They're somewhere in that play-in tournament range. What do you see from the Raptors going forward?
I think they're just kind of getting warmed up. I really do. I think a big thing that was exciting about this game was them starting small, and I think we probably would have seen them finish small if it weren't for Lowry getting hurt. But they need to find a way to really put Siakam into some advantageous positions because he's just not creating scoring for himself in the way that he was, frankly, the first half of last season. And once they unlock that, that just opens up so many doors for them, especially because OG, I think, is taking another step forward in his ability to create and score. So I think this team is just going to get better and better as the season goes on. And I think what was great was we did see that they were able to not be so hyper-aggressive and loading up to the ball on defense and still be able to have a solid defensive game. And that's something that they you know, a lot of the time they'll just load up to the ball so much that they get kind of put into rotation and then teams are able to pick them apart. And they were able to survive that for the most part and not have to get too aggressive in this game.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting in that sense. And I'm going to be very interested to see how they go going forward with this lineup. You know, Aaron Baines has really struggled this year for them. It hasn't been a great season for him on that end. And overall, like, if they're going to go small, let's see what it goes. I mean, this isn't a team you would go small against. When you look at Milwaukee, you're not like, oh, we can go small this game. We'll be fine. They're starting Giannis Antetokounmpo and Brook Lopez, and you think, oh, we'll go small. We'll figure it out.
But it was working in that, you know, they were, I don't know if they were actually in zone, but they were kind of setting themselves up in that, you know, that kind of like what looks like a 3-2 zone where you just have three guys standing around the three-four right. line to kind of load up and protect your, have that safety net to catch Giannis when he tries to break through. And credit to Giannis, especially in the first half, he was really getting down the seams and getting to the rim over and over and over. And they really started to cut that off in the second half when they kind of sunk in that defense more. But with Brook Lopez, you know, because Brook Lopez isn't really a hard roller that much and he isn't posting up that much, you can kind of get away with being a little bit small because he isn't going to be near the basket a ton on offense. So I love the way that they, you know, we know that Nick Nurse is going to be the kind of guy to fight fire with fire. And it worked really well on this night. And obviously we know that this is a team that they're flexible enough and they're hardworking enough that they can take that gamble on a nightly basis. And when they're at their best, it works enough that they can be a really good team.
Yeah, and let's go to the Bucks here real quickly. You said it, Giannis had a great game, but the Bucks fall again. This is their fourth loss. Their last loss was to Andrew Schleck's Oklahoma City Thunder. That's how I refer to the Thunder from now on, Jared. It's Andrew Schleck's team.
That's our official name on this program.
That's how I view it. But you know, they drop these bad games, and it's kind of interesting. Like you said, it Chris Middleton was kind of a ghost in this one. I felt like he needed to be more involved in the offense. I think the Bucks are experimenting and doing things here, and it looks bad at times, but I think if you're allowing Middleton to explore more on offense and kind of as a playmaker, I just did a video on it the other day about his improved playmaking, I think it gives the Bucks another level. But, you know, this was kind of a typical Bucks game from last season that we saw where Giannis goes off and just unfortunately the other side, what the co-stars weren't really killing it tonight. Giannis had said even after the game, I kind of feel everybody on Twitter or social media, in quotes, this is from Eric Neem from The Athletic, is in panic mode, and that should not be the case. So let me ask you, man, you panicking about the Bucks?
No. I mean, it's a little concerning when Giannis doesn't score in the last 6 minutes of the game, especially in a game where he's been dominating. I'm not worried about them. I was a little frustrated that they were in drop coverage against Fred VanVleet going off in this game, and they weren't really adjusting. They weren't getting the big man up closer. You know, they weren't trying to take, you know, really pressure him well. They were still doing the same thing that they always do. And that's frustrating. That's the only thing that I think really bothers me about this Bucks team. It's just that they're not versatile enough and they don't adjust enough in their pick and roll coverages. And we saw how that killed them in the playoffs last year. So I'm waiting for this team to be able to really just become a little bit more versatile and a little bit more pliable. And I mean, it starts with the coach, right? I mean, the players might just like miss shots or like not know what to do, but like the defensive scheme that you're running, that's the coach telling you which scheme you're supposed to be in. And these guys, they got to have a little bit more flexibility if they're going to be the contenders that we know that they're capable of being.
Yeah, and I think they're playing with things. I've seen them play some games where they've switched a little bit and doing a little bit differently. I've seen them attack differently on offense, so more and more. So I think they're in experimental kind of mode in this situation. And here, I'm going to do the Bucks fans a favor. You don't need to panic. Right now, you're third in the West. I mean, excuse me. It'd be really weird if you're in the West. You're third in the East. Okay? No reason to really panic. It's not like you're under 500 in this situation. It's they're trying to figure things out. You'd rather them get all these questions answered now so that there's not any surprises come playoff time, because it was the other way around the past two seasons. You've been dominant in the regular season and been, you know, just sort of fallen out of the playoffs with a whimper the past 2 years. So let this one kind of just sit, let them adjust, and they see how they progress moving forward.
And just a quick caveat, I should say they had Bryn Forbes starting for Jrue Holiday in this game. So that's a huge part of what I'm talking about in the defense. And that's just a lineup issue. You know, obviously, when you get Jrue back out there, that changes so much of what your defense is able to do. So I am excited to see how they evolve this defense. And we knew that stuff like this was going to happen this year because these teams barely had a training camp and they barely have practices. So it's going to take a long time to kind of slowly reform things. But This is why they traded for Holiday, right? They wanted their defense to be more versatile. They wanted their defense to be able to evolve over a nightly basis and throughout the playoffs. And I'm confident they're going to at least get there enough that it's going to be exciting in the playoffs.
Yeah, so we don't need the deer in the headlights look. Fred VanVleet finished with 33 points and 7 assists. Pascal Siakam put up 23 points and 13 rebounds. Before leaving the game, Lowry was rolling. He had 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 6 assists. For the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo led all scorers with 34 points, had 10 rebounds and 8 assists to go with that. Middleton, again, really struggled in this one, only scoring 11 points, only got 8 shots. They did get a nice game from Pat Connaughton, though, off the bench with a nice little 20-piece, so maybe they can build off that. Now on to the news. The Wolves announced D'Angelo Russell will be getting arthroscopic surgery in his left knee and will be out 4 to 6 weeks. Keisha Lance Bottoms, Atlanta mayor, has some concerns about the All-Star game and says people should not travel to Atlanta to party. She has shared her concerns with the NBA and the Hawks. Should be a TV event only. So folks, if you were planning, and I really hope you weren't, going to Atlanta for the All-Star game, maybe reconsider that idea. The Texas weather has forced the Mavs to postpone their games with the Pistons on Wednesday night. Just a bit chaotic with everything that's going on. No reason to put on a basketball game. The Spurs had 4 people test positive for COVID, so they had to postpone their next few games, including a game on Tuesday night. So they're going to be on a little bit of a break. And before we get to the other games, Jared had a chance to talk to Jovan Buha about the latest news on Anthony Davis's injuries and what the Lakers are going to do about it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We are talking to Lakers beat writer for The Athletic and host of the Forum Club, Jovan Buha, who has a couple stories out about the Anthony Davis leg injury saga. So first off, what is actually going on with the diagnosis?
Yeah, so the Lakers have characterized it as a sore right calf after originally calling it a sore right Achilles and then a right Achilles strain. So it's taken on multiple iterations throughout this process, but essentially, you know, AD has a sore calf, the sheath area around the tendon of the Achilles. I've learned a lot about Achilles. Let me tell you, in the last 72 hours, I feel like
I love a good sheath story.
I feel like I'm in med school right now. But you know, that area around it is just sore and just, you know, in discomfort. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, I spoke with Dr. Rajpal Brar, who works at 3CB Performance. You can find him on Twitter. But he's a physical therapist, sports scientist, and his expertise is lower body treatment and dealing with those types of injuries. So he was saying that, you know, there is a difference between tendinosis, which was the original, you know, injury that the Lakers labeled for AD, versus the inflammation and irritation in that area, and that the severity of it, you know, really matters, because tendinosis is a degenerative condition, and you know, it does vary in severity. So you know, he could have a very mild form of tendinosis in his right Achilles, but if he does, you know, that is something that could potentially linger and be a recurring issue for him, you know, not just this season, but, you know, moving forward throughout the rest of his career. Whereas if it is just a sore right calf or a sore, you know, tendon sheath and just kind of that area, you know, under the calf, that is something that can be managed. That is something that he just needs to rest and recover and rehab through, which is, you know, why it looks like he's going to miss the next 3 weeks or so through the rest of the All-Star break. So we don't know officially, you know, the actual diagnosis. We just know what the team has listed, but they've listed, you know, different iterations of it. So, you know, it's kind of conflicting. Even some of AD's comments have been conflicting. You know, after Friday, he said he needed to rest. On Sunday, after he re-injured it, he said he didn't need to rest and that he was clear to go. So there's a lot of, you know, different information out there, but ultimately whether he has tendinosis or not is going to be a really big thing for the Lakers, you know, not just this season, but moving forward, you know, after re-signing AD to a five-year deal.
I mean, it's AD, right? You gotta, it doesn't matter how long a contract's on. No, your franchise, yeah, for rests, sure, on him. And it's funny, we were reading a tweet of yours from after, I think it was the Memphis game last week on the show, and he was talking pretty badass about, like, you can't hold me back. I'm going to play through the pain. I'm going to do whatever I can to be out there for my team. And that's great and admirable until, you know, you have to limp off the court because you bump knees and then suddenly your leg, the back of your leg, is a problem. So what is the messaging now that I think he kind of very quickly realized he can't just be as brash about this as he wants to be?
Well, to your point, I mean, I have the direct quote here. It could go away, obviously, with rest and things like that, but I'm not trying to rest. So, I mean,
hey, I'm like, not trying to rest either. I mean, you got to get,
like,
you gotta
he kind of spelled it out after Friday's game, which was, I was like, when I did a double take when I heard that, because I was like, if you can rest and improve the injury, I just don't see why you wouldn't, especially when, you know, he is relatively brittle. He you know, if you look at his career, he's missed a lot of games, and you know, I actually kind of feel bad for him, because he went into that a little bit on Sunday of saying he puts pressure on himself to try to play through injury because of that injury prone label, and that he doesn't want to be remembered as a guy who missed a bunch of games and was always nicked up, and you know, doesn't want that kind of, you know, perception around him. But, you know, by not resting in what could have ended up being just, hey, let me sit out a few games and come back, you know, at the end of next week, maybe for the Brooklyn game, you know, ended up being, he might have returned too early and, you know, actually re-aggravated it and made it worse. And now we'll be out for about a month. So, yeah, I mean, that quote just kind of shocked me. But I think moving forward, what he said is he wants to up his treatment. Like, he was getting treatment 3 times a day. He was saying he might up that to 5 times a day. And the Lakers just want to be extra cautious with this. You know, they're not winning the championship in February. They're not winning the championship in March. That has to be in June and July. So for them, you know, as the defending champs, they can afford to be the 3 seed, the 4 seed, the 5 seed. Like, the Lakers feel confident about matching up with anybody in the West, or anybody in the league rather, in a playoff series. So seeding doesn't matter for them. It's all about LeBron and AD being healthy come playoff time. And, you know, obviously this is kind of their first test of the season, but I think moving forward, you're going to see a very cautious approach with how they handle AD and potentially LeBron if he ends up getting nicked up at any point.
Oh God, protect LeBron at all costs. Seriously. I mean, Let's make this clear, because, you know, we just had that that really interesting diatribe that that Draymond went on. I shouldn't say diatribe. It was a good monologue about, you know, the pressure that these players get put under. So since the media gets blamed, let's make it clear on the Athletics morning show as the media. I don't, like, AD, I just want you to be healthy and out there playing. Like, don't worry about the injury prone label. Like, just be healthy and play and go win. That's all that anybody cares about. Who cares about injury prone, especially like this year? This mm-hmm. is the year where people are taking days off all the time. People are doing it for load management. People are doing it just to recover because, you know, because, like, they had COVID or whatever. It's like, this is the one year where I feel like resting a couple games would just fly so far under the radar that it would never even impact your Q rating.
Yeah, it feels like more stars than ever are load managing, right? Like, you know, I think if we went roster by roster, there's probably, what, five to 10 guys in the league doing that right now, at least?
I thought it was more like 50 to 100 guys that are doing that right now. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I cover the Celtics, and Kemba Walker certainly has been load managing like crazy. So, yeah, like that's how it is. Like, the KD's, I mean, AD and KD both have to take care of themselves. I mean, that's obviously what everyone wants to see. And when you see an injury change in diagnosis from Achilles to leg the way it has here, it's like, you know, that there's some fishy stuff going on. But thankfully, we've got Jovan on the case. We also have our other Lakers writer, Bill Oram, all over it. So be sure to check out what they are writing at The Athletic. Be sure to check out the Forum Club podcast when you're done listening to this as well. Thank you, as always, Jovan.
Appreciate it, man.
Great stuff there. Speaking of the Lakers, they played last night. Lakers 112, Wolves 104 in Minnesota. Wolves kept us close, Jared. They were a little bit frisky, kept it kind of tight, but the Lakers ran off seven straight points down the stretch to put the game away. LeBron led all scorers with 30 points, 13 rebounds, and 7 assists. Dennis Schroeder added 24 points. And rookie Anthony Edwards, we don't talk about him as much as we do LaMelo Ball and everybody else, but he had a strong game, finishing with 28 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists. Pelicans faced off against the Grizzlies, and man, did they blow them out. The Pelicans outscored the Grizzlies in the second half, 81-55, on their way to the 144-113 victory. And this was the battle of the two top picks from the 2018 draft. Zion was awesome and just unstoppable in this one. He had 31 points, 13 of 16 shooting. Morant was very impressive himself, 28 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds. He even had a dunk, Jared, that had Zion kind of eyes perk up on the sidelines.
I mean, the explosiveness in this game was mortifying. The fact that Zion and Ja almost had identical shooting performances, 12 for 16 for Ja, 13 for 16 from Zion, that was great. But, I mean, this was Zion just going steamroller late in the second half. And it was funny because this was a contending game. This was a close game up until like the late third quarter. And then all of a sudden, boom, Zion's driving and kicking to Josh Hart, who had a career night. He had 27 on the night. And it was just like we were finally seeing that Pelicans offense finally have their supernova that we were waiting for this year.
Got a quick question, and I want a quick answer from you, Jared.
One word.
What is the lowest amount of money I can pay you to take a charge against Zion?
$14 million.
Okay, no, I'd rather he just score a couple of baskets. Okay. Celtics 112, Nuggets 99. Jokic was phenomenal in this one with 43 points. Murray poured in 25 points, but the rest of the Nuggets only combined for 17 made field goals. Not very conducive to a win. The Celtics on their end, Jaylen Brown had 27 points. Jason Tatum had 21 points. And Kemba Walker with 17. Hey, Jared, this is your beat. So very quickly, you got anything to say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, after the Celtics had their worst loss of the year and everybody was talking about rock bottom after the Wizards just humiliated them, this was an important win because, I mean, Denver was missing most of their bench, but Jokic and Murray were still out there and they were able to keep the bleeding kind of contained to those two guys and shut down the rest of the unit. While on offense, they were crisscrossing the court beautifully. They were moving the ball. They were getting wide open shooters pretty easily. And they actually had a coherent offense, which is something that team has really been struggling with so far.
Blazers 115, Thunder, the Andrew Schleck Thunder, 104 in Oklahoma City, which I think Andrew Schleck owns that city. No Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the Thunder again in this one. Lillard put up 31 points, 10 rebounds, and his Cantor had 21 rebounds. He had 8 points. I don't even care about that. He had 21 rebounds, 14 defensive, 7 offensive. I'm just blown away by how many rebounds Enes Kanter had. I don't know if anybody else cares, but I seem to care quite a bit about that. Lu Dort led the Thunder with 23 points.
I mean, listen, as we know of Andrew Schlecht from the Andrew Schlecht Thunder, as he is known legally, this is Lu Dort's biggest supporter, the man that has always believed that Lu Dort could turn into the greatest player in the NBA, and we saw that in this game. Lu Dort is a legend, and I don't understand how he continues to keep being this good.
That's going to do it for today's show. Don't forget about the other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA show. Definitely check out Nerd as She Wrote on Fridays because that's the show I'm on. No Dunks and House of Strauss, plus over a dozen team-specific shows available from some of your favorite Athletic beat writers. Don't forget to follow up on the app to get notifications for new episodes and utilize the podcast episode comment section. And if you're not a member of The Athletic, you're in luck, folks. You can get all of our podcasts ad-free, plus some fantastic writing across all major sports, all at a super low price. Don't miss out on any of Jared's stuff about the Celtics. Get a subscription today at theathletic.com/dailyding. You never know when these promos are going to end, so get there soon. Thanks for waking up with us, folks. Be safe when you go outside. Remember to wear a mask. And Jared, take us home.
Ding, ding, dong. Ding, 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 dong.